Welcome. It's time now for Political Theatre. It's the news, according to me. Well, good morning. It is it's Wednesday. No, what is this? This is Thursday morning already. I think I skipped a day. Somehow we missed yesterday. I had to get up. Oh, my. I had to get up yesterday morning at dark 30. I think it was about, I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I think I actually got up at 4:45. And I was all over the country yesterday. I was in Pennsylvania. Ended up having to go to Ohio for a little while, down to Dayton. And then ended up back in Chicago. Drove home, stopped by the boat. What a day yesterday was. It was kind of a crazy day. Worked with some good people, though. It was fun working yesterday. Last couple days, actually. Because nobody ever questioned what was in my cup. I have vanilla chai again this morning. By the way, it's 7:37 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, July 21st, 2022, on a Thursday here. We have a lot going on, a lot of things to rant about. And I know that's why you tune in, because you love to hear me rant. But you also need to know what's in my cup, and I understand. You can't really focus on anything until you're kind of rested in just knowing what's in my cup. I have vanilla chai, but today I have a surprise for you. I have Cinnabon creamer in there. I haven't had it for so long, I kind of forgot what it was like, and I actually forgot how much I like it. It's, boy, I think I could drink about anything with this stuff in it. That's pretty tasty. I have a few things to discuss today. Had some interesting conversations with some folks, and just discussions, and kind of batting around some interesting theories about the recession and what's going to happen. I lived through the whole Carter thing. I was very much aware. I was in high school at the time, but I was apparently, unlike some high schoolers, maybe I was a little more in touch with what was going on politically for some reason, even at that time. What's funny to me is that some of my friends say, "Oh, you never really were involved. You never really cared about politics much." Well, then you didn't really know me much. I had some pretty strong political opinions. Didn't do too much with them. I didn't get in people's faces, and you know, but their impression of me was that my opinion is I just want government out of my life. I want to be self-governed. I want people around me to have that experience, that same kind of liberty. But I want to be free to be able to express what I think is right and wrong. And now, you know, if you don't fall in line with what you think is right and wrong, if it doesn't fall in line with the Gestapo out there, they will excommunicate you from society. And this is a dangerous place that our country was never meant to go under this Constitution, under the founding principles and the foundation of our nation. Never meant to go here. And this is where we're going. Trevor Loudon had a really interesting podcast yesterday. I think I just heard it this morning. But it was talking about how Mark Levin wrote a book about American Marxism back, I think it was last year. I'm sure he was writing it. How do these people write books? They write a book every year. How do you do that? You have a show that you're on a television show, and then you're on a daily radio show. And then in the middle of all that, you're writing a book. Now, I've had a couple of really great ideas for books. At least two, and probably four. I have other ideas for books, but these are the really good ideas for books. And I've jotted down notes. I've taken all kinds of stuff, put all kinds of stuff down. I get some momentum going and then something else distracts me and I can't get it done. This has been going on for years. And I've even, you know, I'm trying to listen to, you know, like people talk about how to get started on writing your book and how to, you know, how to motivate yourself and how to get organized and all that stuff. So I listen to that stuff and I'm thinking, well, the whole time I'm spending listening to this, I could be getting doing all this stuff. So I'm trying to combine like listening to it while I'm typing out things and taking notes and just putting all this stuff together. And as I do it, the problem with this is it's kind of a contemporary book. The main book that I really want to get out of my paper here is, as I'm writing it, things are changing. Things are developing, and I'm trying to kind of write about current events. Now, what I probably should do, this has been one suggestion that I've seen other people do it. I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but I've seen other people do this, where they'll write at like a daily little daily articles. And what they do then is they compile all these daily articles, they compile it and put it into a book, make a book out of that, those daily articles. Maybe that's what I should do. I should just jot my thoughts down each day. And then by the time I get, you know, 6 months into this, I've got a book that's, you know, 3,000 pages long. Or maybe 2 pages on it with pictures. But it's just one of those things that it's very difficult to do. And these guys are putting out books all the time. What I'm getting at here is I don't think these people are writing these books. I think that they have a team of people and they have ghostwriters. I think that they're not the ones in charge. I think that they're a quick read. They apparently read very quickly because they can proofread stuff and go over things. They have editors and all that kind of stuff that they work with. But they put out books and they sell, you know, hundreds of thousands of copies. I know there's some scam deals where you can, I know there's like, you can belong to a club in Amazon where everybody, you know, vows to buy each other's books, and there's like 50,000 people, so you can become a bestseller overnight just because you play the game of, okay, I'll buy your book, you buy my book. Everybody buys each other's books. Of course, the little unknown secret behind that is Amazon gets a cut on everything you're selling. So of all those 50,000 books you're selling on Amazon, guess what? They're getting money off of all that. I mean, granted, you are too. I mean, you're really not making any money. When you look at it in that way, you're going to lose some money, but it's considered promotional stuff. That way you get your rankings up higher and all this. They're playing that game out there, folks. There's just, speaking of playing games, over the last couple of days, I think it was over the weekend. And I've always talked about the political theater that we see. Whenever you see politicians doing or saying something on the right or the left, but the left is like, they become masters at this now. And they get away with it. If they had to depend on just standing alone in this, they wouldn't be able to do it. But the media backs them up and plays along with their little charade. So they get away with very poor acting and very, very stupid acting. You probably already heard about this. I like to break news. I break a lot of stuff, but I like to kind of breaking news. I kind of like that whole process of introducing something to you may not have heard of. You probably already heard about this. Maybe you haven't. Over the weekend, I just heard my animals upstairs kind of freaking out, so I'm not sure what's going on. They're probably chasing each other around. I have Sandy Cortez has pulled another stunt, and of course Ilhan Omar, which is interesting in and of itself. Sandy Cortez is—they're arresting these people. They're protesting. Now, and again, this gets back to this whole thing of protesting. How effective these kinds of protests are? I mean, when you stop and think about it, how effective were all the BLM riots, protests, whatever you want to call them? How effective were those, really, in solving the problem of racial division in our country? Did it really make an impact? I saw Brandon Tatum played a little video clip of all these actors and all the, you know, really important people. practically crying. And of course, you can't, they can cry. These people are trained to cry on command. They can, they think of, you know, that when they, that child, when they, at a time when they were a small child and they lost their dog, they think of that and they can cry. And that's what they do. So they're getting up and they're all verklempt and they're talking about how, you know, oh, we, I take responsibility. I apologize. I'm so distraught, upset over my. I keep sneezing, folks. I don't know if I keep pushing the mute button. Hope you're not picking this up. Apparently, I'm allergic to fake and phony apologies. Now, it's not that they're fake or phony. They may be very genuine in their feelings and their emotions about this apology. They apologize for their whiteness and their privilege. Now, first of all, apologies are all well and good. That's great. You want to apologize for what your ancestors did? That's fine too. You want to do that? You can apologize for whatever you want. Go ahead. That's fine. Has the thing that we have to get past here is that with an apology needs to come a forgiveness. I don't know that this is happening in this present culture. It is a very one-sided apology, and once you apologize, you get run over. You see, division between human beings, regardless of what the reason is, whether it's racial tension, whether it's economic tension, whether it's just you don't like somebody because of the way they walk, whatever it is that is causing you to hate someone else. I stand against hate. I hate people who hate. Wait a minute. This idea that we're going to just, you know, stand against this stuff. And that we're going to apologize for everything and anything. And that's going to make it all better. And all of a sudden we're going to have healing. It doesn't work that way. You know, you can offend somebody and not even know you've done it. You don't even know that you created an offense. Messiah was very clear on this and was very astute in, you know, it's a big surprise there that he would be aware of anything of the way humans act. He made it very clear that if your brother offends you and you're standing before the altar with your gift, Leave it right there. Leave that gift there and go make amends with your brother. Now, what he's saying there is, I have offended people. I'm sure I've offended people, and I didn't even know it. Now, here's what happens with typically this, and this happens so much in the Christian church. I'm probably every church and probably every social organization there is. I don't want to just pick on the church, but this happens in society all the time, especially among a particular gender of our human race, but I won't go there. Someone will say something about someone else, or say something to someone else, and they don't mean it in a bad way at all, or maybe they do. But let's say in this case they don't mean it in a bad way; they just happen to say something, and that other person is offended. Well, the offended person then goes and tells someone else that really offended me when they said that. I'm a little upset about it. Well, then the person they told now takes on that offense with them. Now, keep in mind, this person never meant it to be offensive. The other person took it wrong, had no idea that they had something in their family that was an issue, that this topic was sensitive for them. Had no idea, no way of knowing. It wasn't their fault that they said something that they said. They were just making conversation or having a reaction to something, whatever it was. And then all of a sudden, this other person takes on that offense with them. Sometimes the second party can actually become more offended than, or the third party, I should say. Third party becomes more offended than the first party did to begin with. Well, then that person tells someone else, and then the next thing you know, everybody's telling someone, and then it gets back to that other person who did the offending, that so-and-so is mad at you. Well, what about? I don't know what happened. What happened? What did I do? What did I say? Well, you need to apologize to them. No, you don't need to apologize to them. They need to come to you and tell you. They don't need to tell everybody else and have them come back to them. See, I have seen pastors do this. I will, I'm not going to use any names here. I don't know if any of my friends, actually that are my pastor friends, I'm not sure if any of them actually, I have a lot of pastor friends, let's just put it that way. And, I don't know that any of the people involved in this particular incident listen to my podcast. So I think I'm okay. Cause I can talk about them without them knowing. Cause it's, and if they do, that's fine. A pastor friend of mine, his wife was offended by something that a friend of mine said. And she didn't say anything to anybody other than her husband. I think she told some other people too, but she told her husband, who was a pastor. Well, he took on the offense as well. And it went around to everybody except for this individual who said what he said. And he didn't, he was joking. He was sarcastic, but that's just his sense of humor. That's just who he is. When I heard it, I didn't even think it was rude at all. But this lady, for some reason, was sensitive to it and she took offense to it. She didn't confront him with it then. She didn't confront him with it ever. She never has. She just all of a sudden decided she's not going to hang around with us anymore. That's her choice. She has chosen to do that. So this is the kind of mentality that a 10-year-old would have, in my opinion. Now, I'm not saying she's got her struggles. She's got whatever issues she has. That's fine. But you have to understand this is a juvenile way of handling the problem. Now, sometimes, and this I think this is a biblical principle. Sometimes it's better to just let it go. To kind of take a step back and realize, you know what, this may have offended me, but it really, they had no intention of offending me, and it's really just my problem, not theirs. I'm not going to go any further with it. I think so often some people are so quick to react. Oh, you need to straighten up. You need to get a grip on how important this really is. It's not important enough to cause division and cause all this turmoil of we're going to work out every little indifference we have, because I guess what, we're always going to have indifferences all the time because we're human beings and that's what we do. It's what we do best. We have differences with other people. And if we spent all of our lives, every day, every we could go back over the last 10 years of our lives and try to make everything right that we've done wrong. We're going to spend the rest of our lives trying to make, and then in the process of doing that, we're going to offend somebody else, and it's all going to go down. It's all going to start happening again. We just need to let it go and move on and move forward and be productive and forgive. This is the heart of forgiveness. Dr. Charles Stanley, I used to listen to him quite a bit. I don't know if he still preaches or not. He's got to be like 147 years old now. He was like 90 when I started listening to him. That was back in the 90s. Very wise man. Now, he was very basic, fundamental kind of Bible teacher. Don't know so much about... Now, his son, I think it's Anthony Stanley. I can't remember what his name is. Andy Stanley. He has kind of a megachurch thing. Much more of a, I would say, more of a spirit-filled kind of vineyard-style kind of modern contemporary church type thing. And I think has had some really good messages. I've appreciated a lot of his very good way of relating scriptural principle to just modern day stories. However, Dr. Charles Stanley was kind of he was more of your traditional preacher kind of preacher. I think he's Baptist, I believe. And just, opens up the Bible and just kind of expository teaching kind of thing. And one of the things that he taught one time was on forgiveness. And he talked about how, you know, he puts his watch up on the, upon his desk, and someone comes by and they steal his watch. And he knows that who stole the watch, and he knows that they have it. And they never, you know, he just forgives them. Just doesn't know where the person is, doesn't know how to get in touch with them, but he knows how it was disappeared, and knows the person who took it, but doesn't know how to get in touch with that person. That person goes on in life worried about this watch that they've stolen. And it causes them to, like, walk on the other side of the street if they think the guy's coming down the street, and they try to avoid this guy out, you know, as much as they can. And now they're on the lam. They're looking over their shoulder. They're kind of, you know, what this guy to catch? He probably knows. And I don't know. Don't want him to catch me wearing this watch. What that person doesn't know is that the person who stole it, that the person whose watch was stolen, has already forgiven him, truly forgiven him, let it go. Now that other person is living kind of in their own little prison of fear and shame. And one day they go walking down a hall, and here's the other person that they stole that watch from coming down the hall. And that person has actually forgiven them to the extent that they've forgotten they even stole their watch. That's true forgiveness. That's when it actually was meant, you know, you really meant what you said when you said you forgive them in your heart. And they meet each other. And the other person is wearing the watch and has no idea that they've been forgiven for that. So they're still living in shame and fear. And maybe they react or act out. Who knows how they respond to this person that they're now confronted with in front of them, that they know that they've done wrong. But the whole idea that you can forgive someone even if they don't ask for it. Officer Tatum. He had this really good little montage of clips of all these people apologizing and taking responsibility and apologizing for their privilege, going on and on about it. And that's all well and good. Go ahead and do that. I'm not saying you can't do that. But the culture is not going to change until it becomes an emphasis among the Black community or any other minority community or whatever community it is, until they can, in their hearts, forgive any and all white people who've ever done them wrong. There will not be healing. There will not be growth. You will be in your own little prison. You've gone from one prison to another. Dare I say this, it is almost a form of slavery, because you now are a slave to that offense. And sometimes the offense doesn't even exist. Because that's what discrimination and racism is about. When you look at another person and see the color of their skin, how many of you have ever, you've met somebody who reminded you of somebody in high school? It's like they look like the person, they kind of talk and walk like the person, they kind of just have that same kind of attitude and personality. And it was somebody you didn't get along with in high school. And they remind you of somebody you didn't like. Maybe it was a family member who did you wrong, whatever it was. They remind you of that person, and actually you don't like them just because of that. Just because they remind you of that other person. I have had people that I felt like I was friends with. This is what's weird. I've met people who reminded me so much of a good friend I had in high school that I felt like I was their buddy. It's like right away I felt like they were my friend. I was right back in high school again. This is the person you just have all of a sudden there's this connection because of somebody that you knew back then. You kind of had this bond with that person, and all of a sudden this person in front of you is a lot like that person. Same kind of, you know, sense of humor, same kind of attitude, kind of whatever. Looks a little bit like him. And you just kind of feel like you're kindred, you know, kind of like this is my it's my buddy from high school, kind of. It's, I think on a subconscious level, at least, there's kind of this sense of acceptance right away. And I probably have been kind of overly buddy-buddy with people who didn't have, had no idea that, that, you know, that was the case that was going on. Or on the other, other side of it, there's probably people who I probably could have been good friends with, but because they were reminding me of somebody I didn't get along with, I just kind of avoided them. Who knows? I don't know. I think it happened. It's just kind of the way we're kind of triggered by certain events because of our past. Now, this comes back into this whole thing of, you know, my ancestors, my direct family line had nothing to do with slavery. My family lived in the North when the war was going on, when the Civil War was going on. They would have been in the part of the country that was fighting against slavery. And yes, slavery had a lot to do with the Civil War. Don't for a minute think that it didn't. There's this trigger out there thing that says, well, the slavery wasn't really a big part of why the North, you know, was went to war against the South. If you go back and look at the documents that were all being written at that time and signed by the Southern states, slavery was mentioned in every single one of them, and it was like the pinnacle issue on every single one of them. There's really interesting, I can't remember what the show was. I was just watching a little documentary, mini documentary about it, and it was this guy talking about the National Archives of Civil War Archives or whatever it was. And it was really interesting. This guy had a whole collection of documents and things that were going. He said, well, he goes, I don't, in fact, this guy asked him the question, was slavery really the main issue in the Civil War? He went back and he said, well, I'll let the documents speak for themselves. And he read statements from these documents, and it was very clear. That was the pinnacle issue. And I think this one, advertisement, this one campaign ad from, I can't think of the guy's name now. I had it up here and I don't know what to do with it. Yeah, I took it out of my notes. This guy, he says, I think he's a black congressman or governor. He's running for office somewhere. He runs this campaign ad and it says, you know, he needs his AR-15. To fight off a bunch of Democrats in white hoods, something to that effect. the little known truth about the NRA, by the way, is that the NRA was initially established. The whole organization was birthed out of the idea of arming slaves to fight their way out of slavery. It was such a radical group that there was a bounty put on their heads. These people who started the organization. Now, Joy Behar recently made some kind of stupid comment about, well, it'll all change when blacks start having guns. What? What does that even mean? Let's get back to the political theater thing. Over the weekend, Sandy Cortez and everybody's sweetheart, Ilhan Omar, who loves the country, absolutely loves this country. She, yes, absolutely loves the founding fathers and everything this country stands for. You can just tell by the way she talks. There was this protest where a bunch of Democrat congressmen, representatives, whatever you want to call them, were apparently arrested. Well, being placed under arrest is kind of you can actually be released on site, which is exactly what they got what they wanted. They got their photo op. They knew that when they were walking past certain cameras, they had to have their hands in certain places and make it look really bad. So what they did is the cops said, you're now under arrest. We're going to remove you from the location. You need to comply. Now, here's what amazes me is, you know, they complied. Now, what they did is they went out in the middle of this intersection and slowed up traffic. I guess I don't get this. Okay, who exactly are you trying to win over when you do stuff like this? We're gonna go out and block the highway. Well, people can hear our voices. All right, that's great. This is a major marketing, proven marketing strategy for anybody in business when you want them to know about your product. You go out and interfere with their lives. You go out and stand in the street. You need to buy my shoes. I want to stand out. You see Nike doing that all the time. They shut down highways just so that people know where their shoes are and what the name of their latest product is, what they're trying to promote. This works really great. It's a great marketing strategy. It wins people over all the time. It wins hearts and minds, just left and right. Everybody who gets stopped and held up in traffic, they're like, oh man, if I would have just bought some of those shoes, I could get out of my car now and walk further. This kind of protest is all political theater. It has nothing to do with actually changing an effect. In fact, I just had this conversation with a fellow recently about how some people will complain. I see this all the time when I'm traveling on airplanes. Something will go wrong. Like this, I was on this flight, supposed to be on a flight from Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Pennsylvania. And a light bulb was burned out in one of the emergency sign things. And apparently it was more than a light bulb. Apparently it was some kind of a fixture that had actually broken. A wire broke or something on the fixture and they couldn't repair it. And this went on and on and on. Waited. And people were mad at the flight attendant and they were mad at the crew. Now keep this in mind. The crew, the captain, went off to Dunkin' Donuts, was in the terminal there, and bought 2 dozen donuts and they split them in half. And they walked down the aisles and gave whoever wanted a donut could have a donut, or served coffee and donuts and water and everything else while this was all going on. The captain, out of his pocket, paid for this. People were mad at the crew, taking it out on the crew for being late. I'm never flying on this airline again. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, that's great. Good, because I don't want to sit beside you if you're going to act like that. I'm glad you're not going to fly on this airline again. I'll keep flying on this airline if you're not going to be on it. Because, you know, that kind of attitude doesn't change the situation. This is what amazes me is people get worked up and honked off at things, throw tizzy fits, spend all kinds of energy being mad at something that being mad doesn't change anything on. We're not, you know, you're not working together with anybody here and fixing the problem. All you're doing is making the problem bigger than it already is. And now we're spending time not fixing it. You're spending time, the crew now is spending time talking to you about you and your important life and not working on the issue. Not focusing on the problem that they need to deal with. Makes a whole lot of sense. But I see this all the time. I see people getting mad at service agents at the ticket counters for things that they can't control. They're just doing their job. Brian Regan has he's a good comedian. I like the guy. He's a clean comedian who has really good observations on life. And he talks about people getting on airplanes and how the gate agent gets on the announcement speaker and he says, okay, I would like for everyone to remain seated except for those of you who are, you know, in section or in, section one or whatever, you know, like boarding group one or whatever they call it. He says, from the time that the person speaks into the microphone and says, you know, please remain seated until your number has been called or whatever. So by the time it comes out of the speakers and here it hits these people's ears, it must sound like, run for your lives, everyone. Try to get on board. Do whatever you can. This is the last flight out of Vietnam. Something to that effect. Push and shove, everyone. Push and shove. Like a bunch of zombies trying to get to a brain. It's just, it's why, you know, you're going to get on there. You're there just orderly, you know, just take your time. It just amazes me. It's like, they don't have a seat. It's like, you've already got a reserved seat. It's not Southwest. So it's not cattle call. And even they have it more organized, but it's kind of, well, so, you know, you're dealing with human beings, and that's just the way it's going to be. But why we don't understand, if we just take a step back and say, okay, what am I doing to help the situation rather than just complain about it? Don't think for a minute that I'm not guilty of this, especially when I get tired and hungry. I get very hangry occasionally. It happens to the best of us. Why do we do it? Because we're human beings. That's the way we are. But sometimes we need to think about forgiveness. Now, there's a time to hold people accountable. Don't get me wrong. There's a time to hold people accountable for what they've done. There's also that doesn't mean you can't forgive them before you hold them to account. I can personally forgive someone, but you're still going to be accountable for what you did. You still need to make it right. I'm not going to get to that story. Let's talk more about some other things that I've been watching here this morning. I went through a whole bunch of stuff. Trevor Loudon had a really good, he's got this little thing on Epic Times called Counterpunch. And occasionally he puts his a video onto YouTube. He has to be very careful what he does because they censor him a lot. He talks about Marxism in the United States. And what Mark Levin wrote a book called... I think I started with this and ended up going off on a tangent there. Mark Levin wrote a book, and it was called American Marxism. And he was talking about how it's not tied to anything from foreign entities. This is just ad hoc kind of hybrid Marxism in the U.S. Now, it is a hybrid style Marxism, but it is at its core and underneath the surface, it is full-blown Marxism-Communism. I know those two things don't really necessarily mix, but it's like a hybrid style thing. But there is a definite influence from foreign countries. All these organizations like BLM and all these other organizations always have ties. The Black Panthers, all of them. He goes through this whole thing and shows how the founders of these organizations have ties to communist China, Russia, Iran, North Korea and in Vietnam, and other communist Marxist countries, in Nicaragua, someplace else, Che Guevara, Cuba, different places like that, all have this these ties to these organizations, and it's at their foundation, and it's. The funding and some of the money even comes from some of these organizations or directly. Speaking of funding and money, the Democrats had this little organization called Run for Something. What they were trying to do is get people to run for whatever they could for their cause and to run for any office whatsoever, just to get them in at local levels especially. You know, become the dog catcher. Do whatever you have to do. Run for something. Get yourself in. This is for leftist. Now, this is a strategy that Che Guevara developed and was very successful with it. It only takes a few people, but those few people need to be in the right position, ahead of the right organizations and politically postured so that they can get their agenda accomplished one increment at a time. That's why they call them progressives, and they've been going on for 100 years. They had a 100-year plan. That's why it's Republicans, and Republicans do this too, the establishment is just as bad, but the conservatives are more in a defensive posture, trying to defend the founding fathers' intentions and everything and of course the leftists, they have this idea that for some reason the people who are trying to defend the nation and the history and everything about the country, they think we just want to go back to the way it was in the old days. That's not the case at all. We're all about progressive technology and making life better. Not going back to, you know, TVs that are black and white without remotes. Those were great days. Great, they were great because we didn't have TVs before that. Every day is a greater day when you have something that you didn't have the day before. But the problem is now, we, along with that, they think that that's what conservatives want. They just want to go back to, you know, Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver. Yeah, those were terrible days. Those were terrible times, weren't they? Leave It to Beaver, his biggest problem was, you know, being a part of a gang and having, you know, drive-by shootings in his neighborhood there. Yeah, it was terrible. So this kind of stuff, and, you know, not that we want to stay in that place. You know, we want technology. We want society to move forward. But their idea of society moving forward is just more into debauchery and more ridiculous stuff. There's always got to be some social issue that's, you know, boiling over, and it's the kitchen table issue. The issues we talk about at the kitchen table. I don't know what you talk about at your kitchen table. Maybe you need to talk to your husband about, you know, his drinking problem. But it's just out of control, insane. These people, they're so out of touch with where American people are. Blows my mind. Explodes it. Just pops right out of my head, which is just more like a snap and pop than really just explosions. But the thing about it is that they get this mindset that they can play these games. Just like the whole thing with Sandy Cortez, who acted like she was arrested by putting her hands behind her back, getting the photo op where the cop has her arm and looks like she's got her hands behind her back in cuffs as she's walking away from the scene. And she walks kind of weird. I don't know what was going on with her. But she was kind of walking kind of like this with this weird stride thing. And of course, at one point she pulls her hand up and she's doing like the power to the people kind of thing, you know. And she puts her hand back behind her hand back again. Can make it, you know, so she makes it look like she's being arrested in cuffs, being hauled off in cuffs. And of course, the photos now that the media puts out there are all, you know, the ones with her in the front, cop behind her has her arm, and her hands are behind her back. Those are the photos they show. Ilhan Omar, same thing. Had the cop pick her up, you know, grabs her by the arm. She gets up, puts her hands behind her back, starts walking off. And I don't think she realized at one point that the cop wasn't behind her anymore. She kept on walking, and the cop was like 20 feet behind her doing something else, and she's still walking along with her arms behind her back. Yeah, they don't just walk off with cuffs on. Tucker Carlson did a little expose on this whole thing, and kind of a little satirical deal. It's kind of pretty funny, actually. But you know, this is what they get away. They get away with this stuff all the time. Sorry, my brain just had a little moment there. Apparently, not enough chai. I'm gonna pour a little more chai on my brain. Yes, that's better. Now I can see clearly. This is the kind of stuff they get away with all the time. It's this whole political theater thing. And now you've got Adam Schiff. How this guy is allowed to come anywhere near the Capitol building is beyond me. Who lets this guy in the door every day? That guy should be fired. This guy is the biggest clown on the planet. All through the whole Trump-Russia thing, he kept telling us, well, there's plenty of evidence. It's right there inside. But plenty of evidence. The same thing happens now in this J6 thing. Oh, the evidence is all right there. Well, there's plenty of evidence. We have all the evidence. I don't understand why the DOJ. Now, apparently the DOJ made some kind of comment. Let me see if I can find this. Merrick Garland made a comment that sounds like they're not going to do anything. Let's see here. Let's look at some of the headlines. This is Thursday, right? Yeah, well, this is usually typically Thursdays when I like to do headline stuff. By the way, Biden has cancer. But I move on. No, he doesn't. He had cancer. By the way, his approval rating is now down to 31%. You realize it's probably lower than that. But if they ever say that his approval rating is below 30%, if it goes to 29%, I don't think any president's ever been that low before. Maybe Nixon right at the end. And Nixon did nothing compared to what these people are doing. But this Secret Service being investigated for deleting text messages. Yeah, this is all of a sudden they're being investigated for deleting text messages. Who are they being investigated by? The FBI? Because they know how to do that. But what they're probably being investigated for is for why didn't they do them? Why didn't they delete the text messages differently? Because the FBI should have been called and asked how they should delete their messages, because the FBI seems to be really good at that. David Hogg, now who's not a child anymore, he's not cute anymore, still out there throwing little tantrums about gun control stuff. By the way, his pillow business went broke. He should have probably just cut holes out of the pillowcases and put them over his head. That probably would have maybe tied a little point on the top. Probably would have sold a lot more of those to the people he's following. Anyway, the pro-lockdown, pro-vaccine mandate Australia experiencing a massive COVID wave. Now, notice people aren't dying to any great extent, but they have this massive COVID wave. And this is a country that has been locked down. Still locked down, by the way. They've barely opened up anything there. Some places are like massively locked down and always everybody's still wearing masks. So they're working on, they're doing a great job there. Brett Kavanaugh's pro-choice neighbors are sick of the insane pro-choice protesters outside their homes. I would be too. If I lived next door to this guy, I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't blame Kavanaugh. I'd start taking matters in my own hands to protect my own property. Of course, that's what people have gone to jail for, by the way. DeSantis and Trump neck and neck in Michigan primary poll. Who cares? We got two more years yet. Italian government on the verge of collapse. Well, that doesn't surprise me. The runoff between Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak to decide the United Kingdom's next prime minister. That's going to be a really interesting race. Keep your eye on that, because Sunak is, I don't know his politics that well. I'm thinking the guy is kind of a problem. I just have glanced over a few articles, headlines about the guy, and I can't remember if he's a favorite to the conservatives or not. He's like an extreme one way or the other, and I don't remember which way it is. Of course, then there's got the headline here, AOC fakes being handcuffed for photo at Supreme Court insurrection demonstration. Speaking of the insurrection, the J6 committee, again, political theater, apparently it's not working out the way they thought, and they're very concerned about this. This is what they were hanging their hopes for the midterms on. And of course, they're concerned that they're not going to get an indictment, because if they don't get an indictment, this is what Adam Schiff was talking about over the weekend on some channel. I just don't understand how the DOJ, he's basically saying the DOJ is not doing its job. He's all upset with them. Doesn't understand how we can be so far out ahead of they've got more tools that they're ready to go after these kinds of things and do investigations than we do. And They're way behind in this investigation. We're way out ahead of them on this. No, you've got a narrative. You keep telling us what it is every day. You have Liz Cheney go out and read this story of what was in the president's mind, what he did, what he should have done. what he didn't do, what he did do, and what he didn't do, what he should have done. That's not, all that stuff is not illegal. Nothing that they're saying that he did was illegal. Except for the stories they make up. Well, this is what he intended. Then he went after a Secret Service agent, tried to choke him, and then he took over the, tried to grab the car. This, and yet, no, and where did you hear that story from? From somebody who heard it from somebody else. Nobody who was actually there at the time has verified these stories. Nobody. Nobody in the car has said that any of this happened. In fact, they've said the opposite. And yet the media keeps saying, well, no, now we found somebody else that says that they heard him tell that story. You heard somebody tell that story, but it wasn't somebody who was there. They were there when Cassidy got told the story. And the whole spaghetti on the wall thing, what does that have to do with January 6th? See, what they're trying to do is they're just trying to destroy his character. This has been their mode of operation the whole time. And it's and for Fox News is playing into this. There was a really good article by, I think it was Dinesh D'Souza. And I think Dinesh D'Souza was interviewing, what is the guy's name? Dick Morris, I think it was. And he was talking about how Fox News basically is completely ignoring Trump as much as they can. They only talk about him when he's, you know, when it's in a bad light. But they don't talk about him much. They hardly mention him at all. They like to mention other people when they have to talk. The only time they mention him is when they compare him to someone else. Just very crazy, weird stuff. So then Joe Biden says he's got cancer because of the oil situation. Because there was oil in his windshield. When it would frost, they would have to run their windshield wipers for 5 minutes to get the oil off their windshield. What? What are you saying? Because that's why, you know, his state has the highest rate of cancer. That's why he has cancer. And he didn't answer any questions. He just walked off. It's like, what did you say? You have cancer? Well, he had cancer. He had some kind of melanoma, apparently. So that's what they're saying. Well, he had some melanoma right before he ran for office. Really? We weren't informed of that. Nobody was told about that. And of course, the glaring question I still have, because nobody's asking it, I wish, hopefully some reporter out there is going to hear my broadcast and ask this glaring question that I don't know he's ever even been asked. Has Joe Biden ever had COVID? Now, we know why they wouldn't tell us if he did, because he was out there saying that they would hate to admit that there was a breakthrough case. But if, I guarantee you, Joe Biden, with everybody around him getting COVID, everybody on the planet now probably has had this thing, just about. Are you telling me, with all the traveling he's doing, everybody he talks to, everybody he sees, everybody in his cabinet who's had it, everybody around him who's had it, he's never had COVID? We're supposed to somehow believe this guy's been immune and done his job and worn his mask and has got four vaccines now, and you're telling me he's never had COVID? And nope, the problem is nobody's asking. Because I guarantee you this guy has had it. Probably during the campaign. He probably had it then. That's why he was hiding in the basement. Trump got it. It's not like they protect the president to the point where nobody can get this thing. And that was back before Omicron. I'm sorry, it was back before, Omicron. Is it Omicron? Yeah. Now it's the ninja virus. Apparently there's more and more talk among even people within the Democrat Party that the guy is just, they need to look at something else. They need to look, they really don't want him to run again. And he keeps talking about that. It's like the guy's barely gotten into office. He's already done enough destruction. Who wants the guy to run again? You really think this guy's going to win if he runs? You're going to put this guy up against anybody. Now, supposedly, you know, I don't know why they worry about Donald Trump. Again, I don't know why they worry about Donald Trump at all. Because apparently an old bumbling old guy who can't even make a straight sentence hardly half the time, can beat him by like 9 million votes. If they're so confident that they got 9 million more votes than Trump did, more votes than Obama did, what are they worried about? Why are they concerned about losing? They're so scared of this guy running again. See, I would think you would be welcoming that. Yeah, come on, bring it on. Bring it on again. Let's do this again. Yeah, come on. Well, you know why? Because these racist voting laws where you have to have you can't mail in votes, you know, just willy-nilly. You don't have drop boxes where you can just have people all hours of the day and night dropping off, you know, 10 ballots here and 10 ballots there all night long. And you don't have people counting. This is something else that the leftists are doing now. They got this new organization. I think they funded it with like $88 million. They had this. I was talking about this earlier. This whole Run for Something initiative. This is switched over now. They've expanded this idea. Now they want to run, not just run for something. They want people to start taking up positions on election boards, being the clerks, being the people who count the, because it doesn't matter. This was actually on Facts Matter with Roman Balmakov. He talked about this organization. Now they're pushing people and funding people to try to get into positions where they count the votes, get into the work on the election boards and work on the election process to be the folks who, you know, sit there and work the polls, do the count, especially the high up people. Like I said, it doesn't take that many people. Like Stalin said, it doesn't matter who votes. What matters is who counts the votes. Something to the effect of, I learned that from Cassidy. Let's see if there's any other interesting headlines here that spur and stir anything in my brain to just share with you my opinion on. Let's see, heroic armed civilian took down Indiana mall shooter. Yeah, we haven't heard any more about that again. And again, no racial talk here. Don't know. Okay, here's Indy constitutional carry law, only 2 weeks old and already saving lives. The shooter himself, the fellow here, looks like, let's see if we've got this. This might be a picture of him. Let's see what police identify three victims, their killer and hero bystander in Indiana mall shooting. This is a video. I don't know that we want to play this. It's 2 minutes long. It's on Fox. I don't know if they've got pictures. This is shooting began. Good Samaritan Elisha Dickin shot and killed Annapolis mall shooter Jonathan Sparman. Okay, so Jonathan is a white man, and Elisha Dickin is also a white man. The shooter looks like he's a young kid. Boy, he looks even younger than Elisha is like 22 years old. I don't know how old the shooter was, but he can't be any older. That kid looks young. The fellows who were shot, husband and wife from identifies Pedro Pineda, 56, and Rosa and Rivera, 37, was Victor Gomez, 30, were fatally wounded when Jonathan Sapperman opened fire on shoppers in Zona Green Bay. There's a bunch of other people injured as well. He's 20 years old. Shooter was 20 years old. This is a tragic situation. However, thank God there was this man was there who handled the situation extremely well. This is exactly the situation that I was talking to someone about a while back about Indiana's constitutional carry law. And he was talking about how he scares the daylights out of him. Well, then you must be a criminal that scares the daylights out of you. For people are walking around with guns all the time and nobody's getting shot up. And then when a shooting does start to occur, random mass shooting about to happen in a mall, and he gets knocked down before he could kill 19 people. He killed three too many. But at the same time, how many more would he have killed? He still had magazines left with bullets in them. And my understanding is this guy shot like 45 yards away with his handgun, took this guy down. Now he used every round in his gun. I think he used 10. This is again where fog of war, people don't realize a lot of cops have been in a situation where they get into a gunfight and they lose track of how many times they've shot. They said, I only shot two or three times. No, your gun was empty. You had 15 rounds in there and it was empty. Oh. Adrenaline takes over and you don't realize how many times you've shot. Now, but some people say he hit him with every round. I doubt that if it was that kind of a distance. It only takes one to take the guy down. But my guess is he probably hit him multiple times, but probably not every round. However, he was very careful. This is what amazes me, too. He was very careful of keeping people back and kind of taking the guy on by himself and getting everybody else behind him. And he didn't want to accidentally shoot somebody, a bystander. Pretty amazing. Unfortunately, he's kind of this is not an easy thing to do, to take somebody's life. And he can be hailed a hero all day long. But at the end of the day, when he goes, when he's up by himself, at the end of the day, he has to reflect on this issue of he took another person's life. And that's not an easy thing to go through. And so he needs your prayers, as well as the families of the victims and the families of this young man who did the shooting initially. Obviously, there are problems there. And I'm sure there's a lot more to the backstory of this shooter. Well, folks, it is. It's been an hour. You've gotten your money's worth. You paid for an hour. You got an hour. And all that money you spent to listen to this program, I appreciate it. I do appreciate you listening. I appreciate you putting up with my rants and this is kind of philosophical Thursday, I guess. Now it's turned into at this point. I just more or less just kind of rambled on, listening to my ramblings. Tomorrow morning we'll have a show as well. I'm still here at the home studio, which I, again, like it's ever going to happen. I'm hoping to have the other sound booth moved into the house. That's going to happen today. It's got to happen this weekend because I got to get stuff moved because there's some serious changes happening for the, I've got to be gone, possibly gone 6 days next week. It's just way too much. All during a time when there's like stuff going on, the fair is going on, all this stuff's going on. I got to be gone, but I get to see Chris Tomlin on Saturday, so that's got me stoked. Listen to his new album stuff. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend.